your life on this Wednesday, January 8th, 2020. Hello again, everyone. I'm Ariel Helwani. Welcome back to the program. It is good to be back on a Wednesday afternoon here in New York City. Great to be back in the swing of things, if you will. We are getting geared up for UFC 246 on January 18th, the return of the notorious one, Conor McGregor, going up against Donald Cerrone. You know about all of that. We had the awards show, the 7th annual Helwani Knows Awards on Monday. And dare I say, best one yet. Dare I say, most talked about one yet. Maybe even most controversial one yet. It was a lot of fun. I appreciate everyone who tuned in, who sent in their thoughts, good or bad. If you agree with me, cool. If you don't, cool. I just care that you watch and that you're interested in what I have to say. And again, these were just my awards. Helwani Knows. It's named after my darn nose. So everyone just calm down. But I appreciate the interest and the passion. So as you know, as I said, we've been doing this now for 7 years, 7th annual, 2019 version. And back in the old days, in the MMA Hour days, at the end of the show, New York Rick and I would actually give out the following year's awards. We would say who we think is going to be the male fighter of the year, who we think is going to be the female fighter of the year, the fight to watch the following year, maybe even the story to watch the following year. Well, on Monday, we wanted to keep it all, for the most part, centered around things that happened in 2019. But I said at the end of the show that we would look ahead to 2020 on today's show. And now that we get to do two shows every week, this was the perfect way to split it up. So late last year, I was away on vacation with my family, and TST, being the tremendous producer that he is, sent me a very long document, very long, very detailed document about, you know, the highs and lows of this past year and the good things that we did, the numbers, all that stuff. And one thing that really stood out to me, this is no joke, one thing that stood out was the people want more New York Rick. And it's interesting because when I first came to ESPN, you know, if I'm being honest, I was sort of, you know, I was encouraged less New York Rick. You know, it was time to move on. But here are the people, loyal to their guy. He has always been the people's guy, if you will, the people's psychic. They have demanded more New York Rick. So this show is just going to be New York Rick, me, and a little TST as well, talking about the year ahead. We have put 2019 to bed. We are now focused solely on 2020, and we are going to focus this entire show on what we usually did at the end of the award show, and that is focus on the year to come. So without further ado, New York Rick, how are you?
I'm doing well, my friend. And can I say, before I inevitably rip apart everything you say later in the show, how touched I am for the people's support, and how special and how honored I am to be a part of this now second leg of the awards. We've graduated from the, you know, most comprehensive and most thorough awards show in the sport, and maybe in all of sports, and maybe in all of awards.
Yes, I agree.
To now having a second leg, an extension for our look to 2020. It's truly fantastic, and I'm very happy for you.
Dare I say, it's a bit of a throwback, if you will. It's a bit of a crust first.
Listen,
edition.
If you want to get that hashtag back up.
Yeah, it was a good time.
It's a great time in history.
So this Mutual Admiration Society is now over. It ends right this second because I have a bone to pick with you, my friend. Quite frankly, you stabbed me in the back on Monday, and I'm going there. I'm breaking the fourth wall. You stabbed me in the back. Tell the people how you stabbed me in the back. Go ahead. Tell them. It made for great viewing, but you stabbed me in the back.
I'm not actually aware.
Yeah.
You're going to have to fill me in.
Listen, I was agonizing over these picks for months. Since November, maybe even since October, I knew what was coming. I knew Izzy and Masvidal were going head-to-head. I knew Captain Eric and Eugene were going head-to-head. I knew Zhang Weili and Amanda Nunes were going head-to-head. And I relied on your friendship. I weighed in on what you had to say. I took it to heart. I thought about it. I digested it. And you gave me advice. And I used that advice to make my decisions. And then you come on the show on Monday, and you went against all my picks. You stabbed me in the back. Okay, here's the thing. Either you were leading me down the wrong path for that moment, or you were being truthful privately and then you stabbed me in the back. So which is it?
I'm going to deny all of those allegations. And I'm going to say that, look, you know, you made some bad picks, and that's okay. I've made a bad pick or two in the past, maybe famously, maybe not, or infamously, let's call it. But that's okay. Sometimes you make the wrong call, and that's why I'm there to correct you. And that's why, they had me on at the end of the show to bring it all home. I will deny to till the end of our days that I led you astray or gave you bad advice. In fact, I only give you good advice.
So then you stab me in the back. So here's the thing. Let's just address a couple of them off the top. I know I talked about looking ahead, but first we have to put the show on Monday really to bed. The first one that I got a lot of heat about was Zhang Weili over Amanda Nunes. I think you're right. I think a lot of people actually think that the Nunes Cyborg fight happened last year because it happened at the very, very end of 2018. They were both 2-0. They were both 2-0 in 2019. And one of them, Zhang Weili, beat her opponent in the title fight in 42 seconds, completely starched Jessica Andrade. And yeah, she made history, first Chinese fight, all this stuff. But forget about that. She starched Jessica Andrade in 42 seconds. A pit bull, a bulldozer, like a tank. She just ran right through her. And she also beat Tisha Torres. Okay, great. Amanda Nunes, awesome. You beat Holly Holm, tremendous. You knocked her out, first person in MMA. I'm not taking anything away. Jermaine Duranemi, great win, didn't get a finish, cool. But like, to say that it's absolutely egregious, to say that it's a crime, to say that it was a robbery to not give it to Nunes, this one baffles me. This is a coin flip, if there ever was one.
Both wins were tremendous for both fighters. I think Tisha Torres is a very good fighter, and I think that's being overlooked a little bit. There is no circumstance where this is an outright travesty unless you are including that win over Cyborg. Unless you have misremembered that that fight happened at the very, very tail end of 2018 and not in 2019, there's not an argument to be made that Weili Zhang is a bad pick. Amanda Nunes is an equally good pick. I think it's a very tough selection to be made, but unless you are including that Cyborg win, it's hard to say that this was an outright mistake. And in fact, I agreed with you. I think Weili Zhang earned that.
So that was a tough one, but I wasn't expecting anyone to really get all fired up about it.
Yeah.
Honestly, I was like, okay, people would weigh in. But this one, they were like, oh, so upset, all so offended. All right, whatever. They're both 2-0. I don't care what you people say. Now, the next one, male fighter of the year. Again, very tough. The two main ones, 3-0, right? And look, you could go back and forth. You know, in hindsight, could you make a very strong case for this scenario? Izzy wins fighter of the year. Masvidal wins comeback. Masvidal wins most improved. Maybe that's the most logical, fair thing. But I just felt like Masvidal, in addition to being comeback and most improved, and I don't think anyone disagreed with that, I just felt like it was the year of Masvidal. Like, he was just the biggest story from the moment he agreed to fight till the end of the year against Nate Diaz. His story, and I gave him story of the year as well, the resurrection of Masvidal, just was a constant throughout the year. Now, Adesanya was tremendous. The win over Gaslam was incredible theater. The win over Anderson was kind of a passing of the torch, but it wasn't, you know, it wasn't the greatest fight. It was somewhat close, maybe closer than it should have been. And then the win over Whitaker was great. But again, very close. And yeah, you can say the deciding factor is real belt versus fake belt. Okay, fine. But this one, I'll live with an Izzy pick. I can't live with the Cejudo pick. I'm sorry. You're fighting twice as opposed to two guys who fought three times and all had big fights. Cejudo wasn't very happy. Actually sent me a message, and told me that I could say it on the air, but I don't have the audio here. He sent me like a voice note. Henry Cejudo sent me a 6-minute voice note. First of all, voice notes need to be like at least 1 minute. I can't listen to 6 minutes,
you
right?
Mean at most 1 minute.
Yeah. At the most 1 minute. At the very least, like acceptable is like 15, 20 seconds. A minute is fine. 6 minutes is just egregious. Send me a 6-minute voice note breaking down all those other guys' fights. Like he said, Anderson's washed up. He said Gaslam is just kind of like, you know, really a 170-pounder who's moonlighting as a 185, which I thought was interesting since they're boys, right?
Yeah.
And then Whitaker, who hasn't fought and is constantly injured. So he's like totally diminished those fights. And then he goes to Masvidal, says he knocked out a guy who had just been finished by Tyron Woodley and was kind of damaged goods. Then he beats the overhyped Askren. Oh, okay. He's like, all right, knockout of the year. Cool. You give him that. But like, really, who the hell is Ben Askren? And then Nate Diaz is a 500 fighter who has double digit losses. Like, what was so great about that? I beat the greatest bantamweight of all time, in his words, he says, on EPO. And then I beat Marlon Moraes, who's on a roll. Amazing. But unfortunately, there's 12 months in a year and you only fought for 6 months. So I have a hard time giving it to you.
He cannot win it. But I will say this, I actually believe this. If he had fought one more time
100%.
And beat nearly anybody in 100%. That division, he probably wins the award. Because those two wins, as he, you know, is arguing, were tremendously impressive. If he wins one more fight, doesn't matter against who, nearly, maybe, I mean, anybody in the top 10, and I'd probably give it to him, to be honest.
I couldn't agree more. One more fight. Even if it's against, I don't know, Throw out a guy. Throw out like a mid-tier bantamweight, a mid-tier flyweight. One more fight, he gets it, or at least is in very strong consideration. Unfortunately, he's in the Usman, Patricio Pitbull category where it's like, you know, guys fought twice and, you know, you're just one notch below. Okay, so everyone's all riled up. But then we get to Coach of the Year. And, whew, this one was an interesting one. So I give it to Eugene Bearman, who a lot of other media outlets gave it to Eugene Bearman. And I don't think that was a crazy pick considering the fact that they went 11-1 and the two champions. And people are trying to discredit him for saying Alex Volkanovski isn't a full-time member of City Kickboxing, even though Volkanovski's career took a massive step when he went to City Kickboxing. And not only working with Eugene Bearman, but Brad Riddell is his striking coach as well. Of course, he's training in Australia with Joe Lopez, and he deserves a lot of credit. But the Adesanya win and the year he had and the year that Hooker had and Kai Kara France prior to the loss and Riddell in the UFC. Okay, a lot of people are saying, okay, it's fine. Give it to Bearman. That's okay. But what's making me get all this hate is the fact that, and I'm just saying stuff that actually happened, Captain Eric watched our entire show via his Instagram, and I guess was waiting to get the award, and it meant a lot to him, and was very upset when he didn't get the award. So let me just say something right here now. I have the utmost respect for not only Henry Cejudo, despite his pretty stupid tweets to me over the last couple days, and Captain Eric. I have been talking about those guys. I've been pumping them up. I've had them on my show repeatedly before, you know, Cejudo's manager stopped him from coming on the show back end of the year. I am always happy to talk to those guys, and I think they deserve all the credit, all the love, all the accolades of the world. It's not the worst spot to be in to be number two or number three. And I'm sorry if he feels like, you know, he had it in the bag or deserved to have it and I robbed him of that. But at the end of the day, it's one stupid man's opinion. And being number two to a guy who had an incredible year isn't the worst spot. And it hurts. I've reached out to him twice. Text, phone. He won't respond. He always responds within seconds. And it part of me is sad about this. Part of me is honored that they care so much. I mean, who would have thought 6 years ago, MMA Hour Awards, that anyone would care as much as they care about this? And so I just want to say I'm honored and I thank them for caring. And I'm also sorry they feel this way. But at the end of the day, I didn't want to have any co-winners. I didn't want it to be like the 1995 NBA Rookie of the Year Award, because that really bothered me as a 13-year-old that they gave it to both Grant Hill and Jason Kidd. You got to pick a winner. I had to make a tough choice, but it doesn't mean I don't think they're incredible. It doesn't mean I don't think they had an amazing year. It doesn't mean I don't have the utmost respect for both of them and what they have done. And Captain Eric in particular deserves a ton of credit for not just being a tremendous coach, but for being a tremendous showman and a guide and a manager to his fighters. Like, he helped craft the Triple C personality. Paulo Costa going from Bohashinya to Costa, Pitbull doing his thing. Like, he's a brilliant mind, and it bums me out that he's so mad. But in the end, I just had to look at the facts, and I feel like Bearman just had a bit, like a notch above, like it's so small, just a slightly better year.
I'm going to say two things. You handled all of that very nicely. You encapsulated it well. First thing, when it comes to determining a coach of the year, if we're going to get into a game where it's like this coach is 35% responsible for this fighter and this coach is 75% responsible for this fighter, nobody's ever going to win this award. It's going to be silly. If this person is coached by this, if this fighter is coached by this coach and they are part of that gym, that is enough. We can't get into this game where all of a sudden we're determining how much of their coaching is responsible for the fighter's output. Secondly, I would say, you've been very, fair to Captain Eric over the course of this year. He had a tremendous year. You've said that many times in writing, on radio, on podcasts. And what it says about these awards is that no matter how agonizing, you are willing to, choose who you think is the rightful winner. And I think people have to live with the results of that. Now, unfortunately, Captain Eric is taking it very personally. I do believe he had a great year, as do you. But Eugene Bearman's year was the superior year, and we just have to move on from that.
Yeah, and I want people to know, like, this probably means a whole lot more to Captain Eric than it does Eugene. Like, Eugene is probably annoyed that he had to come on my show. Yeah. And it probably would have been a hell of a lot easier to just give it to Captain Eric, because I never would have heard from Eugene. He doesn't want to talk to the media. He doesn't want to be on shows. And I know it would have meant so much to Captain Eric, but that's not what I'm doing. Like, I see people calling, like, Cejudo himself is calling it the Brown Nose Awards. If it was the Brown Nose Awards, I would have given it to you guys, because I know how much it meant to you guys. But I had to make the tough choices. It means a lot to me. I know I joke about it being named after my nose. I get that. But like, it really does mean a lot. And I take this very seriously. When I see people who care and how much it means to them, it really means a lot to me. And I want to take it seriously. And I want to put all my time and attention into picking the right winner. I ask you, I talk to people like Kaposa. I talk to Robert Sargent of MMA Rising, like people who I really respect. And in the end, you have to make the tough choice, but I hope it's not personal. And I hope that we could still be, you know, acquaintances and be professional. And, you know, there's always next year, as the Brooklyn Dodgers like to say. So speaking of next year, let's transition to next year. Let's transition to 2020 and let's start talking about some of the things that, you know, we like to talk about at the end of these award shows, but we're going to talk about them on today's podcast, which I'm excited about. First, let's start with fights that have to happen in 2020. Now there's no limit to these. And here's the only caveat that I'll throw out. It can't be booked. So you can't pick Khabib Ferguson. That's booked. Now, we all want that to happen. It's probably the fight that we all want to see the most because they booked it four times, and it's just a tremendous fight between the two best lightweights on the planet. But if you're picking a fight here, it can't be on the books. It can't be scheduled. It can't be close to done. Like, Izzy Romero doesn't even count as well because that's on the verge of being done. So are there fights, in your opinion, that have to happen that you need to see in 2020?
Oh, there are plenty. How would you like to do this? Do we alternate? What do you want to do?
No, give me your list and I'll give you my list.
Oh, I'm giving you my whole list.
Give me your list.
All right. I've got a long one.
Oh, wow.
You asked me for five.
Yeah.
I've got 10.
Oh, my gosh. All right. Here we go.
These are not in order. These are not in order. I'm equally interested in all of these. Conor McGregor versus Nate Diaz 3. Need to see this in 2020. Mm-hmm. Tyron Woodley versus Colby Covington. Need to see this in 2020. Jorge Masvidal versus Colby Covington. Need to see this. Jorge Masvidal versus Leon Edwards. We need to get an end of this three-piece in the Soto saga. Khabib Nurmagomedov versus Conor McGregor 2. I need the rematch. Now we get into, these are, I would say those first five are my absolute, and then these next five are after, but I need them all. Paulo Costa versus Israel Adesanya, the fight that we're not getting because he's on the shelf. Darren Till versus Robert Whittaker. I'm convinced by Darren Till's Instagram game where just dropping into everything and asking Rob. I'm convinced I need to see that fight.
It's very entertaining.
Macy Barber versus Paige VanZant. And wow. I know Paige VanZant is now a free agent, but...
Well, no, she has one more fight.
After this fight that she has booked upcoming, she will be a free agent. I need that fight. It needs to happen. Daniel Cormier versus Jon Jones. I need a third fight between those three. And then my last one, a bit of a cheat. Tatiana Suarez versus anybody. I just need her to be back. Mm. I need to see her fighting in the octagon.
Wow, that's a lot. And those are all great. Like, I can't poke any holes. Although I do feel like there's a Khabib Conor 2, a lot has to go right. So when you say you need to see that, that means you're saying that he's going to win twice probably before getting to the third. And when you say, here's where it gets tricky, when you say Nate Conor 3 and also Khabib Conor 2, are you living in a world where like all these things kind of flow, you know, from one to one like a domino? In other words, are you saying Conor goes from Cerrone to Nate to Khabib?
It's possible. I mean, I could see a world, let's say Cowboy wins. Conor versus Nate makes a ton of sense at that point, no?
If Cerrone wins, Conor, Nate makes a lot of sense.
Now,
but can
I
you really go to
I
Conor?
I think Masvidal, Conor makes sense, but you've been against the idea of Conor loses, Conor getting Masvidal. I'm okay with that,
no,
actually.
There's no chance.
I'm okay with that. But I could see a world where all of a sudden it's Conor versus Nate, and then they're just itching to put Conor McGregor back into a fight with Khabib. It doesn't really matter if
he loses
that.
So all he has to do is beat Nate.
In my opinion, I mean, would you disagree that they'd be willing to do that? I would say they are.
I mean, yeah, he could probably even get the Khabib. If the schedules lined up, he could have gone the Khabib fight after a win over Cerrone.
Yeah.
I mean, Dana White has pretty much said that.
Yep.
It's not going to line up. He's going to want to fight in between. And that's why I think it's either if he loses to Cerrone, then he gets Nate. If he beats Cerrone, then they'll probably try to do the Masvidal fight. And that's why Masvidal is waiting to see what happens with that fight.
I will take either of those fights for Conor McGregor. Very interested.
Okay, there's a lot there. And I like them all. I'm surprised you didn't say one in particular, which I'll start with this one. DC Stipe 3. That fight has to happen, in my opinion. That's the retirement fight. DC needs to move on with his life. He needs to move on with his career. And he really, like, in many ways, I feel like the Stipe fight has almost become more personal for him than the Jones fight. I even saw him on Twitter talking recently about the Jones fight when it was the anniversary of the first one. And he was almost talking about it in a glowing way. And that was the one where he lost 4-1. I feel like mentally he's kind of moved on, John Jones, and he's moved on
from just that whole feud and rivalry and the bad blood. And I feel like Jones, in some respects, although he pokes him sometimes, has kind of moved on as well. DC Stipe feels unresolved. It's 1-1, trilogy. He was supposed to retire. Like, there's a part of DC in the back of his mind now, I have no doubt. He's like, I could have been done. I could have walked away perfectly. I could have walked away with the belt. I would have been undefeated as a heavyweight, two-weight champion, and I ruined it. And it was going so well. I was looking so good in that fight. And then, for whatever reason, you know, he was able to chop me down via the body. I just want to get this fight. He wanted to fight on December 14th, and the UFC was going to put him as the main event, especially when Usman and Covington were having their troubles as far as their contract negotiations are concerned. He was going to fight in the main event of that card. And so the career could have been over already with that third fight already done. But of course, Stipe has the eye injury, and they're trying. Here's the interesting thing. They're trying to make this happen, but where is it going to happen? Because March is probably going to be Izzy versus Romero, if they can get that done. Both Behrman and Izzy said on Monday that, you know, they're essentially at the goal line. They didn't use that term, but they're just finalizing a few things, and that's what I've heard as well. Romero's on board, of course. He would be foolish to not be on board. And then in May, historically, they go to Brazil, and that's what I'm hearing as well. June might be Australia. So are we waiting till July to do DC Stipe? And does he want to wait that long? I think at this point he will, because, you know, we're already January. But then now we're talking about the return of Conor as well. Maybe Conor comes back in August. Who knows? All I'm saying is I need to see that fight so he can just move on with his career. Speaking of Conor McGregor, I agree with you. Conor Nate 3 is a fight that I want to see happen at some point. I feel like slowly but surely we're kind of moving away from that fight being as important as it could have been a couple of years ago. So I feel like this is a good year to make it happen, especially when he says he wants to fight 3 times this year. Masvidal Usman is a fight that I want to happen, and I really should be a little more clear. Masvidal fighting for the belt, I think, would be a great story in 2020. He's been in the game now for 17 years. To finally fight for the belt, I think, would be amazing. I understand, and I appreciate the fact, by the way, that he's being honest about the fact that, hey, a fight over Conor McGregor, for me, a fight against Conor McGregor, I should say, is a much bigger fight. It's a money fight. I'm all about prize fighting. I'm all about making the most amount of money and especially making up for lost time. But at some point, I'd like to fight for the belt as well. And this is why I love Masvidal. Quick tangent. The reason I love Masvidal is because he's the real deal. I know he won the BMF belt, but really, he should be the RMF. He should be the realist in the game as well. Because I'm so tired of all these people. Every time Conor says someone's name, then they come back, oh, go to the back of the line. Oh, you got to go beat some guys. Oh, I'm going to ruin your career. You don't want any of this smoke. You know who I'm talking about. Usman did it. All these people do it. Like, come on, guys. You all get so excited when Conor says your name, and rightfully so, because he's the biggest draw in the game. He's the most lucrative fight out there. He's the biggest draw as far as popularity is concerned, as far as money is concerned. That's what this whole game is all about, and he elevates you if you fight him. When he says your name, you get excited. So stop pretending like this isn't a big deal for you. Stop playing hard to get. At least Masvidal is like, yeah, of course I would take that fight. Happily. Even though it doesn't really make sense, of course I would take it. Now, if he doesn't want it, I'm going to move on and fight for the belt. But I just appreciate the fact that he's just real about the whole situation and not playing this stupid, you know, game where it's like, oh, yeah, go back to, you know, fighting the contenders and maybe then after 3 wins. No, stop it. Everyone, including Khabib, would take that fight right away.
There's even a term for it called the Red Panty Night, Conor McGregor.
Yeah, yeah. And it still exists. Until further notice, it still exists. It's not going away. Now, if he loses 3 in a row this year, all right, maybe we can revisit that. But right now, it still exists. All right, so I gave you DC Stipe. I told you about Conor Nate. I told you about Masvidal Usman. 2 others that I want to mention. Izzy Costa, I agree with you 100%. Izzy Costa would be just the second time in UFC history that 2 male fighters who are undefeated are fighting for the belt. If, of course, you know, they remain undefeated, which we suspect that they would if they would meet up at some point. I think it would be a huge fight. I love the dynamic between them. I love the trash talk. It's a lot of fun. I'm bummed that it's not happening next, but I want to see that fight in 2020. And here's one more that I'll throw out your way. And I love the other ones that you said. Till Whitaker would be amazing, all that stuff. But one more that I want to see in 2020 is John Jones versus any heavyweight. I don't even care who it is. I want to see John Jones fight at heavyweight in 2020. I don't care if it's Surreal Gan. I don't care if it's Alan Crowder. I don't care if it's, I don't know, Volkov. I don't know if I want to see him fight for the belt because I think that there are other guys who probably deserve it. And I honestly want to see them go away from the champion versus champion. Like, this last thing with Cejudo has pretty much soured me for good. The idea of being a double champion in hindsight gets watered down and kind of gets soiled, in my opinion, when months later, you are stripped of one of the belts. It's useless. And I have a lot of respect for Nunes for wanting to be a active double champion. But I just want to see John Jones test the waters, dip his toe in the heavyweight waters, and see what it's like, because I think he'd be happy up there. So those are the five that come to mind.
You mentioned being surprised that I didn't have DC and Miocic on my list. Mm. It's because I see that as an appetizer. I see that as an appetizer for the entree that is John Jones versus Daniel Cormier.
You really think that's a thing? I don't even feel like it's a thing anymore.
I'll tell you how it's a thing.
Okay.
And maybe this segues into some of the things we'll talk about next, but heavyweight championship, Daniel Cormier versus Stipe Miocic. This goes Daniel Cormier's way. You're Daniel Cormier. You're now the heavyweight champion. You're weighing. Do I walk away? Is this it? Am I sticking to my word and retiring after one more? Now, we already know he said he would retire when he turned 40 and didn't stick that. He extended the window a little bit. I think there's one thing that can get you out of bed, and I think that is a fight with John Jones. And here's where it gets even more interesting. I think Daniel Cormier would be willing to go down to light heavyweight to fight John Jones. And I know that you're saying that heat is cooled off. I think they could turn that boiler back on any second and it would get right back to where it was. But it could also be a situation where all of a sudden John Jones is looking at the heavyweight division and he doesn't seem too keen to jump up there. He's talked about it. The UFC has talked about it, but it hasn't happened yet. And it's not like there's a glut of contenders at light heavyweight that are making John Jones stick around. There really isn't anything that interesting at light heavyweight for him. It seems to me like he's waiting for the right fight at heavyweight. And I'll tell you what would be a great fight for John Jones at heavyweight is a guy that he's already beaten twice named Daniel Cormier, who's holding a strap that would make him the double champion. So I'm seeing a world where Daniel Cormier beats Stipe Miocic and John Jones fights Daniel Cormier at heavyweight for the heavyweight title.
Well, it's essentially the scenario that we were talking about had he won in August.
Yep.
Like all of us believe, all right, he wins. They're going to throw a boatload of money his way and he's going to stick around for this last fight and this is the way it's going to end for him. I think the fact that he lost and now he's sticking around almost a year longer than he wanted and who knows when this Stipe fight actually happens, I feel like his family's just going to be like, if he wins this third fight, if they actually do it, be like, please stop. You don't need to do this anymore. You're ending on a good note. I think the fact that it was that Cinderella ending was taken away from him, I think if he gets it, he'll just be like, all right, I'm good.
I would love to believe that because I want Daniel Cormier to have that kind of send-off.
Yeah.
I don't believe it. I believe that he could get up for a John Jones fight, and I think he would get up for a John Jones fight, and I think John Jones would get up for a Daniel Cormier heavyweight title fight. I think that is the scenario that I envision.
All right. So let's transition. You said that it's a good segue. It is a perfect segue to some bold predictions. Bold predictions for 2020. This could be anything you want. Do you want me to start on this one?
Yeah. Why don't you take it?
I'll start on this one. I'll give you a few, and then you give me a few as well.
Sure.
We could go back. How many do you have?
I've got five.
All right. I probably have a couple more, but I could stick to five as well. All right. Here's one for you. Zuffa boxing will never be a thing.
Mm.
It will not be a thing. We're approaching the 3-year anniversary of this even becoming a thing, a term, if you will. What's taking so long? Now, maybe I should clarify. It won't be a thing in 2020. Never? Never is a strong word. I mean, it could be a thing. It's like the XFL coming back 18 years later. Like, who could have predicted that? But this year, it's not a thing. There's too much going on. There's too many expenses. What's the point? And this idea, I get frustrated with the idea that Dana White can save boxing. Boxing doesn't need to be saved. Boxing is doing very well. Boxing has many different platforms that it's airing on these days, and the fighters are making a lot of money, and they're very happy for the most part. Now, the fans may not be so happy because it's a little more disjointed with several other players involved, but they don't need Dana White to come save boxing. This idea is completely flawed, and I don't know if he will be met with the kind of reception that he thinks he'll be met with. Maybe he has already felt that and that's why it's not becoming a thing. But could we stop talking about it like it's a thing until it becomes a thing? It's getting a little tiring for me.
I love that. I'm sick of it myself. I'm sick of hearing about it. Can I ask you two follow-up questions?
Yes.
Question number one, just for the entirety of these predictions, these are things that we're predicting for 2020 specifically, right? Like Zuffa boxing could become a thing, but you're just saying in 2020 it's not.
Yeah.
Secondarily, does that mean that there will not be a UFC/Dana White and Floyd Mayweather thing independent of Zuffa boxing?
You know, I'm not convinced that that's a real thing as well that's going to happen. Now, is there a world where Floyd comes back to fight and the UFC/Zuffa/Dana White lends some promotional muscle to it? Yeah, I guess. is that really Zuffa Boxing? No, that was never, that was not the idea of Zuffa Boxing. Let's be honest. Like, they could stick that logo on it the same way they stuck Zuffa Boxing on Mayweather McGregor, but that wasn't Zuffa Boxing.
Yep.
Like, we all know what Zuffa Boxing was supposed to be and what we were told it was going to be. And that's not it. And it's not the Floyd fight as well. So even if that does happen, I still feel like I'm right. And the, and the other part doesn't happen. And I wouldn't be surprised, but I don't even know if that's a real thing. And I saw my colleague, who I love dearly, Mark Raimondi, talk about Floyd. And like, first of all, there's no sane person on this planet that actually thinks Floyd is going to fight in MMA, right?
No, there's no sane person.
Fight in boxing? Sure. Pacquiao, someone like that. He's not going to fight like an Errol Spence or someone like that, or Terrence Crawford. But, you know, one of the older guys, sure. I just, even if Dana White is involved as far as promotional, I just don't view that as Zuffa Boxing.
For the man that has handled his career about as perfectly as you could ever handle it from a boxing perspective, I'm not going to talk about personal issues, but from a boxing perspective, in Floyd Mayweather, to all of a sudden at the end of his career after multiple retirements to decide, oh, this is the time I'm going to test the waters in MMA, you'd have to be foolish to think that that was even a real scenario.
Okay, let me give you a couple other ones.
Yeah.
The UFC slash Reebok relationship will come to an end. Now, it officially comes to an end next year, but it will be clear by the end of this year that they're going their separate ways. It's a bold prediction for 2020. Another bold prediction. Bellator will air on either CBS and or Showtime in 2020. And they will move on from the Paramount Network, and they will air on CBS and or Showtime in 2020.
Does follow up, does that change the DAZN relationship?
There's still a couple of years left on that one. But no, it doesn't change it. It just, in my opinion, will reinvigorate Bellator. It will get them to be a little more aggressive as far as free agency is concerned. I think they're going to try to make a splash whenever that time comes. And I think it's good for the sport to have some big platforms involved. And I think you will see them become what one was a couple of years ago. Like going after free agents, I think you'll start to see them try to get some games to try to be a little more, to beef up the roster a little more as they make that transition. Another one, it won't happen in 2020, but it will be announced that the UFC will go to Africa in 2021. You feel me?
I love that.
And then I'll throw one more for you.
Yeah.
John Jones will fight at heavyweight in 2020.
Interesting. I have one like that. It will be no secret. Having just talked about it, I think heavyweight champion Daniel Cormier will fight light heavyweight champion John Jones. Now, I'm leaving myself a little bit of wiggle room. I'm not saying which division this will happen in, but I do believe that those two will square off either at heavyweight or light heavyweight. Because I do think there's a world where John says, I'm still not moving up to heavyweight. Come down to fight me, Daniel Cormier. And I do see him taking that fight no matter what. The competitor in him is just not knowing, you know, we've seen DC on the stage for so long. I think we know what kind of competitor he is. I think if he can get a shot at John Jones, he's going to take it no matter what. Second one, Tatiana Suarez becomes UFC champion. Now, I think this is bold bolder than potentially, you know, initially imagined just because she's been dealing with this injury. I think she will come back, you know, later in the year and she will be the new UFC strawweight champion. After looking like it was saved in a previous year, the UFC's flyweight division is going to be shuttered. And that's not all, folks. I believe that women's featherweight is going with it. I believe that two UFC divisions, men's flyweight and women's featherweight, are going to be shuttered this year. I just don't see what is happening there. I don't see a future. Even though they have now announced a flyweight title fight, I don't believe that it will make these divisions will make it to the end of the year.
And by the way, just to interrupt quickly, we actually just debated this on Ariel and the Bad Guy. Cejudo deserves credit for saving it, but maybe in the end he only saved it temporarily because him not sticking around. The reason why it was saved was because, the reigning defending champion is this very charismatic, fun guy that everyone wants to see fight. All of a sudden, he beat the GOAT at 125, Demetrius Johnson. But if he's no longer in the equation, we're essentially in the same spot as we were before that Dillashaw fight, which is a rudderless ship with no real face, no real big star, you know, carrying the baton. I agree with you. Like, all of a sudden, the moment they announced that fight, it was like, okay, cool. Cejudo, this is confirmation that he did temporarily save it because otherwise they would have just shut it down. But what is the future? I feel like the future is just as murky as it was before all this happened with Cejudo.
I like the way you think, Helwani.
Yeah.
I'll give you my last two because you could have a few more on the back end. I've only got my five. Jordan Burroughs will sign with an MMA promotion this year.
Wow, that's a good one.
I think he'll get off the Olympic run, and he will decide that he is going into MMA. And then lastly, my number five, Bellator, which you're predicting will be on a different network. is going to adopt the 165-pound and 175-pound weight classes. This especially, I think, makes sense if they're going to a new network. You add a little new shine to this. You say, hey, we're debuting with a 165-pound and 175-pound maybe tournament, maybe, you know, a round-robin type thing. There's some fun that could be had if they're willing to change the weight classes a little bit. So I'm thinking Bellator is going to take a shot at that.
Wow. That's something that would be really smart for them to do, because one of the things that I feel like, and it's not quite as impactful as what I'm about to say was in the old Strikeforce days, but one thing that really helped them in Strikeforce was they had something the UFC didn't have.
Yep.
Women. They don't have that anymore. They can't claim that. So they could be the place where, hey, you want to fight at 165, 175? Come to us. I like that one. And the Burroughs one is fascinating as well. He's probably going to go for the Olympics. I'm no amateur wrestling connoisseur, but I think he's going to try out for the 2020 Games. But that doesn't, you know, stop him or preclude him from signing with someone, much like Aaron Pico did prior to the, 2016 Games. So that's, yeah, I love
well,
that.
Well, we'll also be post that at a certain point this year.
That's true, that's true.
And
that's
then an he honor. Can decide.
Now, guess what? All of a sudden, we've got another MMA aficionado on the team, TST, who exactly a year ago probably didn't even know what MMA stood for, certainly not what UFC stood for. He has informed me that he has some bold predictions as well. Is that correct?
I do, Ariel. I've got some predictions. First of all, just like he always has since the day he got into the UFC, Israel Adesanya,
yes,
four fights this year,
whoa,
will clean out the middleweight division like he's predicted. I don't know the order, but Paulo Costa, Darren Till, Jared Cannonier, Yoel Romero, when that gets booked, he's going to fight them all. He's going to win in 2020.
Can I just say I'm sitting here listening to you rifle off those names like a proud father, because I mean, I would even say 6 months ago you didn't know who these people were, and now you're just killing it. You're killing the game.
Well, here's some more names, because right, here's my second prediction. My guy, Colby Covington, will be back. He will have the welterweight belt by the end of 2020.
He
could take out Woodley, Masvidal, Edwards, RDA, if McGregor makes it into welterweight somehow. Colby Covington will have the welterweight belt by the end of 2020.
Now, how do we feel, New York Rick, about the fact that he is mentioning two of his favorite fighters? Like, is he picking, is he making predictions here with his heart or his mind?
You know what? I'm looking into his eyes right now, mm-hmm, and I've never been more sure that somebody was sure of their predictions. This man is fired up. This man believes every word he's saying. And you know what? I buy it. I buy what he is selling right now.
They're not crazy.
No, they're not crazy. I would say they're bold, though, to be able to say that a champion is going to beat four different people this year. There's nothing soft about that prediction. I am buying that these are bold predictions.
Wow, well, only two, TSD?
I do have one more. It's unrelated to MMA, but it's a big U thing. I have a prediction that Ariel Helwani will do sidelines for an NBA playoffs game this year.
Wow.
Wow.
I appreciate that. This is just you buttering me up. I mean, we're almost there. We got another game, by the way, on January 24th, the Rockets visiting the Timberwolves. And then I just found out yesterday I've got another game on February 21st. If you're in the area, the Oklahoma City Thunder with their new leader, Chris Paul, doing oh so great, hosting the Denver Nuggets. So thus far, I'm averaging one a month, gentlemen.
We're
getting close to April.
Yeah, when we get to April, this is one more a month.
Unless I blow it with the last two and they're like, sorry.
It's possible.
It is very possible. But I appreciate that one. I like you putting out that positive energy.
But is there something, is this almost like a backhanded compliment? Like, that's the bold prediction? Shouldn't you be in line for that?
That's
isn't
true.
TST yeah. now doubting you?
What's so
you?
Bold about that?
I'm just saying, like, they're making a rapid ascent here in the NBA world. It would be a lot to already be in a playoff game.
Rapid ascent.
I'll just say this. If this was me in the booth, I would not disrespect my host that way. I'll tell you that much.
Wow. Here's TST trying to butter me up, trying to instill some confidence, and you've turned it into a negative.
I still have some learning to do here from the veteran.
Yeah, from the great New York Rick. Okay, I like these bold predictions. A lot of things. I hope people wrote these down, and perhaps we can revisit them. We can make this into a yearly thing, sort of like I've been doing with John Pollock for all those years.
Yeah, I mean, I have 100% success rate all these years, so there's really no point.
Absolutely. Okay, so do you have New York Rick, and this could be in line with some of your bold predictions, but is there a story or two that needs to be watched, that needs to be watched carefully, like that is going to be the thread throughout the entire year in 2020? Is there a story to watch, or even two, that comes to mind?
I mean, I have two, but the first one I feel like is the obvious gimme that everybody has is Conor McGregor's 2020 season.
Yeah.
Like, it feels like that is the discussion that will impact MMA the most throughout 2020. There's no doubt.
Yeah.
My other one is, and I think this affects kind of the future of multiple divisions, is will anybody be able to challenge John Jones? Like, is there a challenge at light heavyweight for John Jones, or are we going to be in a position where John Jones is floating between light heavyweight and heavyweight? Are we going to be in a position where he moves full time to heavyweight? He is, for all intents and purposes, you know, let's call him number two, number three on the list in terms of recognizable names and stars behind Conor McGregor or Habib and Conor McGregor, but he's up there, and his future is vastly important to the future of MMA, to the future of the UFC. I don't see kind of what the future is for him. I don't have a clear vision of it. Now, I have my prediction, but I consider it a bold prediction. I think his movements will be very crucial in 2020.
Yeah, I agree with that. I will also say the story to watch is if, in fact, Conor will fight three times.
Yeah.
Because he has put it out there, right? He wants to fight three times. He's viewing 2020 as a season. He has lofty goals. He wants to fight Khabib at the end of the year in Moscow. He wants to beat Cerrone and then someone in the middle. He's called out a lot of different people, all well and good. But the story to me to watch is, can he come back? Can he regain his old form? Can he be as active as he once was? And can he fight three times, as he's predicting that he will fight three times? And so we'll get the first answer to that question on January 18th in 10 days or so. So that's going to be exciting. The other story for me is something that I alluded to earlier is, I really think Bellator is going to have a big year. I think they're going to be a lot more aggressive. I don't think 2019 was a particularly good year for them. I think it was a bit of a down year. I feel like ratings are down, but just like not so much the ratings per se, but I just feel like they're not a part of the conversation. Like their events are just coming and going, and they're not making the impact that they were even 2 years ago, or certainly what they were doing in the Strikeforce days, like when they fought, when they had the events. They felt like bigger deals, and I feel like they're going to rejigger things and have events that are going to make more of an impact, and that would certainly tie into the CBS Showtime stuff that I talked about earlier. And the other one is, in concert with Bellator, I think actually one is going to take a bit of a step back. I think it's very curious that Vitor hasn't fought yet. I think they're going to spend a little less money. I don't know if coming to America, pardon the pun, is a smart move for them. I think they should stick to what they know in Asia. And I just feel like they were very aggressive 2 years ago. I don't feel that same aggression. So I think Bellator is going to, you know, 2 years ago, I think the storyline was, oh, maybe one is going to, remember when we ended 2018 with all those signings? Like, oh, maybe one is going to surpass Bellator as the number two. I think now Bellator is going to reassert itself as number two.
Can I ask you something based on those two combined?
Yes.
It may be, you know, a more complicated question. In fact, it's definitely a more complicated question. But I would ask you, these signings, you know, the idea of the free agency has definitely benefited fighters. But has it benefited these other organizations, these big name signings? In my estimation, just based on the evidence we've been seeing, I don't see the impact that I think they would necessarily expect. And, you know, you're predicting a big free agency for Bellator. But my question is, we just saw this with one, and it didn't lead to anything. Is this going to be something that they will immediately regret? Like, is this the method for establishing the new stars?
Signing them?
Signing these free agents, you know, the bigger names.
Yeah.
Is it having the impact that the organizations would hope it would have?
I think it helps a little bit. I mean, I don't think it helps when Eddie Alvarez loses. I think it helps. I think it helps when you're trying to gain a little popularity in America by signing guys like Alvarez, by signing guys like Sage, who also lost, by signing guys like Demetrius Johnson, who had a tough go early in his one run. But it's very hard, man. It's I mean, this is something we've been talking about for years. It's really hard to make stars. I mean, just ask Bellator how it worked out, right? Like Rory didn't really work out for them. Is Gegard working out? And he's about to become a free agent as well.
And even before that, we're looking at Benson Henderson and
there's Matt Mitrione. There's examples.
And this is why my question is that, because I think we've seen this. We've seen the kind of free agent moves.
I feel like this is
more
of a rhetorical question. I feel like you know the answer to the question, or at least you think you do.
I think I know the answer, but I also agree with you that I think we're about to see Bellator do it again, which I don't, I'm not sure is that the way forward.
I guess it depends on who we're talking about, right?
Yeah, you kind of have to hit the person. Like, we've just seen Cyborg. We've just seen Cyborg go to Bellator. We'll see what the impact of that is. I'm actually more thinking Cyborg's free agency signing, even though it happened last year, will be super important to this year for Bellator.
Yeah, She's fighting Julia Budd on January 25th. I just think that
the immediate shot in the arm is there. It's
tempting,
always there.
But at the end of the day, no. History has shown that if you just pick up these pieces for the sake of picking them up, it doesn't really change your fortunes.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, people will get behind, like AJ McKee.
Right.
Is just as valuable right now, a homegrown guy that you could get behind, that you could say, like, look, we made this guy, just as valuable as signing Anthony Pettis right now. Like, yep. Pettis will get them some attention, but at the end of the day, what is he going to do? And the other thing is, anyone who can truly make an impact, regardless of who they are fighting, the UFC is going to do everything in their power
to lock
them
up. Right, they're going to
lock them up. You know what I mean?
Yep. It's a difficult game. It's such a difficult game.
We talk about free agency. It's not true free agency. It's still right. Not there. It's not even close to being there. It's not what the NFL or the NBA is or Major League Baseball. I mean, there's just a couple places and, there's the matching rights and this idea that you can resign. I would only say that it still baffles me that everyone doesn't wait until the end of their contract to resign. Like, why wouldn't you play that? I mean, even Rory. If we're going to take him for someone who's being honest, and I believe he is an honest person, the fact that he's making more money at PFL, even though it is PFL, and say what you want about where they fall in the pecking order, at the end of the day, the whole point of this game is to make money and to walk away with as much money as possible. The fact that he's making more money in PFL than he did in the UFC and Bellator is all you need.
The fighters are winning. The more options, the fighters are winning this exchange 10 times out of 10, and it's fantastic. Fight. And your question, why would you not wait till free agency, is the perfect question to ask, because even if you re-sign with the UFC, and we've seen that happen, I think people have this misunderstanding that once you say you're going to fight out your contract, that means you're gone. We've seen people fight out their contract and re-sign with the UFC. You just learn your value. You learn what you're worth on the open market. And even if that means I want to go back in the UFC and maybe I want to chase a UFC title, learning your value is not a bad thing. It's only good for the fighters, and I think we've seen that.
TST has one.
I do. So Ariel, all I know about fighters is what they've said on your show. So basically this year I was introduced to Thug Rose Nama Yunus. I love her. She's so emotional. She wears her heart on her sleeve. Seeing her knocked out at 237, right, to Jessica Andrade.
Yep.
Broke my heart. She said that she's probably coming back in 2020. Said that on your show. I can't wait to see how she fares in 2020.
Yeah, me too. She doesn't have a fight yet. She doesn't have anything booked, but she did say she's going to come back. A huge fan favorite. It would be nice to see her back. And I mean, clearly New York Rick doesn't think she's going to be a champion because he said Tatiana Suarez is going to be a champion. So
hey, maybe she gets in there before Tatiana. Yeah, maybe she's the one she takes the belt from.
Maybe. But honestly, Tatiana is a great story to watch as well, only because will she actually be able to realize her potential? Like, the neck is no joke when you're a wrestler like her and in any kind of athlete, to be honest. She's banged up.
She is banged up.
And remember this time last year, we were all like, that was the foregone conclusion. Oh, end of 2019, she's going to be the champion, right?
Yeah, well, she was talking about an October return initially. And then, the injury proved to be much harder to deal with. And to your point, like, are we going to see that potential realized? I ultimately think yes. Like, she's overcome many things in her life, and I don't think this will be an obstacle that will stop her. And I'm excited to see if she's able to realize that potential, because I think among the strawweights, she's the one that everybody is kind of pointing out having that potential. I really would like to see that realized this year.
Okay, I'm going to throw a curveball your way here. We're going to play a little game called True or False.
Okay, hit me.
True or False. GSP will fight in 2020.
I'm going to say false. Do I give a reason?
If you want.
I can briefly say that I think we've left the era where the UFC needs to sign people outside the organization, where we'd see a CM Punk or somebody just brought in for that injection that we've talked about. I don't think the UFC needs GSP as much as GSP needs the UFC. So I do not think we will see him.
Okay. True or false, Conor McGregor will fight 3 times in 2020.
True. Absolutely true.
Okay, true or false, Khabib Nurmagomedov will end the year undefeated.
Absolutely true.
Wow. True or false, Henry Cejudo will fight at 125 pounds this year.
False.
True or false, Henry Cejudo will end the year the 135-pound champion.
Oof. Oh, boy. I'm going to say true, although Peter Yan makes it very hard to say that, but I'm going to say true.
True or false, Amanda Nunes will defend the featherweight title once this year.
False. I predict that division is shuttered, so false.
So you don't think anyone there will not be a single featherweight title fight this year
it
in
is
the
gone.
Women's division. Wow. True or false, Amanda Nunes will fight Valentina Shevchenko for the 3rd time this year.
Yeah, for lack of better options, I'm going to say true.
Do you agree with me that it'll be a little too soon to make that fight?
But I have zero interest in that fight.
Zero interest is a strong statement.
I've seen it. I've seen it twice.
Twice, and they were very close, and they're much better fighters now than they were back then.
There is not a scenario where Valentina overcomes the difference in power and size that Amanda offers. I'm not interested in that fight, but I do think that they're, quite frankly, there's just not a better fighter available to face Amanda Nunes, so it's going to have to be.
To say you have no interest is a little crazy.
Sorry.
All right. True or false, Max Holloway will be the featherweight champion by the end of this year.
Does that mean he ends the year as champion, or
yes.
Does that mean he will recover it
he
and then potentially
the
lose
champion.
It? Oh boy. False.
True or false, Sabit Magomed Sharipov will fight for the featherweight title this year.
True.
True or false, Izzy Adesanya will end the year undefeated.
True.
True or false, Brock Lesnar will fight in 2020.
Same as GSP, I'm going to say false.
And true or false, Nick Diaz will fight in 2020.
That is the one that I think might happen, so I'm going to go true.
Wow. Against who?
Man, you could sell me on Robbie Lawler versus Nick Diaz right now, and I would be about as excited as possible. That's the only reason it didn't make my list is because Nick Diaz isn't on the roster. Otherwise, that would have been one of my must-sees.
That actually has a better chance of happening than the Masvidal fight.
I would love that fight.
When I say that, I mean, I don't think Diaz has any interest in that fight happening, but I feel like it'd be just a lot
easier. Almost saying like anything other than Masvidal has a better chance of happening.
He just has too many options at this point.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. End of this year, 2020, who is going to be the male fighter of the year?
John Jones. Mm. John Jones is going to have at least 3 wins this year. I think it's finally the year after many, many times of me predicting John Jones to be the fighter of the year that he will make good and he will be the fighter of the year.
It's almost like he's kind of like LeBron.
100%.
In his prime, where we know he's the best guy, but you don't want to give it to him for some reason. I don't know why
that
is.
Unlike LeBron, he's gotten in his own way a lot of times. LeBron has been there and done it and played the 82 and gone to the finals every time. John Jones has, in many years where you think this is going to be the year of John Jones, he's gotten in his own way. I think this is the year.
All right. It's a good pick. I'll go with Israel Adesanya, the guy who I robbed this year. I think he will be active. I don't know if he's going to get 4 fights in. But again, when trying to predict this, you also have to look at how their year is shaping up early on. So
yeah. A
guy like Cejudo would definitely be in play. But the fact that he's still recovering from the shoulder surgery, we don't know when he's going to come back. So maybe he only gets 2 fights in. You know, Izzy's slated to fight on March 7th. So that means he could get very easily 3 fights in, maybe 4 if he's supremely lucky. So I'll go with him as my 2020 male fighter of the year. Now, what about female fighter of the year?
I'm going with Tatiana Suarez because...
Wow. But that just goes against what I just said.
It doesn't, though. Because if you think about this year's, how many times did the winners fight? Or the nominees fight?
2.
If Tatiana Suarez can get in 2 fights, including 1 championship win, I think that will be enough, and I think she will win this year. Because I don't see Amanda Nunes being active just from the simple fact that I don't think there's options at 45. I think the division is pretty much gone. And I don't see a ton of options at 35 either. The best one got knocked out by Irene Aldana. So I am thinking...
I like the way you said that.
Yeah, you know, tried to spice it up. I am thinking that Tatiana Suarez will fight twice this year, end the year as the strawweight champion, and win that distinction.
Wow, that is a really bold one. You need to put that down. I mean, that could have worked for your bold predictions as well, even though you did mention her. I'll go with Valentina Shevchenko. It's almost the easiest one because I feel like the gap between her and the rest of the division is so wide. And if she fights Nunes, man, she fought her really tough. I mean, you can make a strong case that she beat her the second time in Edmonton. I was there. I wouldn't count her out.
That win alone, I think, would nearly earn her the title.
So those are my picks. I'll go with Last Stylebender and the Bullet, as Che likes to call her, and you're going with John Jones and Tatiana Suarez. TST, you wanna chime in on this?
I mean, it'll be Adesanya, of course. Yeah. That's my pick.
I like the fact that you're the only one that actually pronounces his name. Like sometimes I even go back to the old way. I'm surprised you didn't pick Colby. If Colby wins the belt, that's going to be hard to deny. What about female?
But the 4 people that he picked Adesanya to beat, if he beats those guys, that is a year.
Yeah.
What about female?
Female, let's see, I'm not as well versed in there, but I'll go with, let's see, who do I like in female?
Amanda Nunes, you got Valentina Shevchenko, your Rose pick would be very interesting. Zhang Weili. Tatiana Suarez. Yoani on Jacek if she gets the belt.
Oh, I do love Yoani. I met her for your road show. Let's go with Yoani. She's very nice. She's
there
cool.
You go.
I love how you just pick. Can I throw out two more true or falses to you that I forgot? Justin Gaethje will fight for the lightweight title.
True. It really depends on the timing.
I know,
if the Conor fight, yes, I'm going to say true.
It's a tough one. Okay, here's one more. Leon Edwards will fight for the welterweight title.
Oh, boy. That is so tough. I want to say true because I believe he's earned it, and I believe there's going to be plenty of opportunities, but it really seems like they are not willing to give him that shot. I'm going to say true and knock on wood for Leon. I think he deserves that.
If Conor wins, I think he has a great chance.
Fighting for the welterweight belt.
Yeah.
Because
then Masvidal goes fights Conor.
Conor kind of controls both the answers to both of those questions, doesn't he?
It's amazing how much he controls at 170 and 155, and the guy hasn't won since 2016.
Hasn't even fought
at the very
MMA.
Top. We're talking about the very top of the division.
Yeah. It's at crazy. All last year. Didn't fight at all last year in MMA.
Unbelievable. It's amazing that we used to do this segment in like 15, 20 minutes. Maybe it was longer back in the old days. Right?
I mean,
we just did almost an hour on this stuff, right? Didn't we, TST? Where are we at?
Yeah, you're 55 minutes in. Let's get on with it.
Okay, yeah. New year, new you. All right, so those are our predictions for 2020. I think we could all agree that it's shaping up, at least for now, on paper with the return of Conor, the Houston card looking a lot of fun, the March card potentially with two title fights, and, of course, April 18 in Brooklyn looking tremendous with that main event. It's shaping up on paper with the names involved to be a fun one. By the way, in case you are not online, a lot of people have been asking me, I get one question these days, like a predominant question I get at least like 5 to 6 times a day. You know what that question is?
No.
Is there going to be a press conference for McGregor Cerrone? Well, while we were doing this podcast, while we were taping it, they have officially announced that on Wednesday at 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern, 10 p.m. in Ireland and the U.K., there will be a press conference with Conor McGregor and Donald Cerrone in Las Vegas at the Pearl at the Palms Casino Resort. So I'm looking forward to that. That is going to be a very fun time. A lot of people keep asking us about that. We're going to have a lot of coverage as far as 246 is concerned. I'm going to be there as of Tuesday till Sunday, and we're doing Ireland Bad Guy there. We're going to have two radio shows from Vegas in addition to all the Sports Center stuff and all the press conference media stuff. It's going to be a good time. But for now, it is time.
Wait.
Oh, what?
You forgot something.
What'd I forget?
What we always do. How we always end this, Ariel.
Oh, yeah. Well, okay. I was going to end it. I was going to use the. Okay, fine. Fair enough. I was going to do that at the very, very end, but that's fine.
Come on.
Okay.
We need to do this.
All right. So how we always would end the show would be, who's the one guest that we want to see or hear from on the Monday show, formerly known MMA Hour, now Helwani Show, each and every year. I picked the great Gina Carano, and this past year, my dreams were finally realized. It was magical. It was 1 hour. It wasn't in person, but it was everything I hoped
it
would be.
It was great.
And then some. So I don't really have a pick. I mean, I do have a pick.
Oh, what a cop out.
No, I do have a pick, but nothing will ever top that.
Yeah.
That was just incredible. So I just want to, for the newer listeners, for the TSTs of the world, I just want to let you know that each year I would pick Gina Carano, and each year it wouldn't happen. And it was just a big deal that it actually did happen last year.
Every year is Gina Carano. And I've picked The Rock multiple years, and that one happened too this year. So you had a
both
good run in
picks.
2019.
Yeah.
Both of our picks got.
How about the fact that they happened in the span of like 3 weeks?
Yeah. Not a bad 3 week run. I'm going to go first because who honestly cares what I want to see? You book the show. Yours will be the important one. So I'll just go out of the way with mine. But it's sentimental, and I would actually truly love to see it. And that guest I would like to see is Jason Mayhem Miller. I would like Ariel Helwani and Jason Miller, who's now clean and sober, out of prison, to reminisce, to walk down memory lane, talk about the fateful moment on formerly the MMA Hour, and have a face-to-face. That is what I would like to see.
That's a great one. Actually, honestly, you just gave me chills. Because I've been paying attention to Jason, and I've been seeing his tweets, and you could tell he kind of wants to be involved, and he's weighing in on PFL and UFC, but it's all very... It's all just very like Jason Miller. It's not disturbing or a little frightening. And I know he does some volunteer wrestling courtesy of Adam Hunter, the MMA roasted comedian. I'm very happy to see, at least from afar. I haven't been talking to him privately, but from afar, he seems to be in a good place. I would love that. That would be – nothing's going to top that one. That's a great one.
There you go.
That's a phenomenal one. So I almost feel guilty saying this one because that one was so good and wholesome, but I'm just going to throw it out there. In the spirit of this having zero chance of happening, I would like to see Lorenzo Fertitta on the show.
Oh, boy.
Only because –
yes.
Only because I feel like he still hasn't done an interview about the sale, about, you know, what he's doing, where he's gone, what he feels about the sport, you know, what if this, that. Like, I just feel like there's so many unanswered questions, and we're approaching the 40-year anniversary of the sale in July. So I say, like, Gino was the only fighter and real personality, but if I really was being honest, like, Lorenzo is probably the last guy left who had never been on the show.
Look,
any sort of, you know, influence on the sport of MMA.
You picked Gina for so long, and it finally did happen. I don't think there's any reason not to say Lorenzo and let's make this thing happen. Maybe it's not this year, but we're going to
There's
make
a
it
better
happen.
Chance of Dana White being on the show than Lorenzo.
Okay, before we go, sorry. I need 2 minutes.
Okay.
Two things. Yes. I have to gripe. We have to go back to your awards.
Okay.
Amanda Nunes cannot be the fighter of the decade with 3 losses. It's just not possible. She cannot be the fighter of the decade over Chris Cyborg, who the reason
I'm rolling up my sleeves here.
She's the fighter of the decade is because Cyborg won for the decade. Amanda Nunes' win isn't significant if Chris Cyborg is not the fighter of the decade.
But they actually fought.
They fought at the end of the decade.
Yeah.
And Chris Cyborg, for the entirety of that span, hadn't lost. Amanda Nunes beat her. Is she the best fighter now? Absolutely. Is she probably the best female fighter of all time? Absolutely. Is Chris Cyborg undoubtedly the fighter of the decade? Absolutely. There is no argument that she is not the fighter of the decade. And that is why Amanda Nunes's win is so impactful and so important.
But
She beat her with 2 days left in the decade. The rest of that?
No, not true. You see, you're making the same mistake. There was 1 year and 2 days left in the decade.
You're right.
All right.
Fair.
And then she beat 2 other people.
Still.
Right?
You're right. There was 1 year and 2 days left. Still.
Yes.
You cannot be the fighter of the decade with 3 losses. It's the thing that hurts Demetrius Johnson as well.
But by the way,
you cannot be.
The 3 losses were at the very beginning of the decade.
Yeah, the 1 loss for Cyborg was at the very end. It doesn't matter where it came.
But it's not how you start, it's how you finish. If she would have started the decade on an 8-fight winning streak and then lost a 3-fight, it's like, all right, fine, you didn't end. I mean,
no.
I think most of us would have said
nope.
Ronda Rousey was you know, on track to being female fighter of the decade, and then
not
everything,
enough time though.
Well, and also she just kind of fell off the face of the earth as far as MMA is concerned.
If we're just gonna pick and choose a 5-year stretch, like Amanda's last 5 years, great. But that's not how it works. Listen, we can disagree about that, but there's one thing we can't disagree about,
wait.
And this is the last thing.
I just want to say, I get what you're saying, and you might just bring it up now. When we talk, if you're going to bring up mail, I don't know what you're about to bring up.
No, you're going to be shocked by this one.
Okay, but listen, I still don't feel comfortable with the John Jones fighter of the decade.
Oh, no.
Because of the PEDs.
You can't say this.
Because of the PEDs. There's a part of me that's guilty that I sort of feel like I should have picked GSP.
No, it's John Jones. It's John Jones.
What about Chael's DC pick?
Unless we're going to erase the history. Yeah, that makes no sense.
What?
Unless
I thought it was pretty good.
Unless we're going to erase the history books and say John Jones never competed because he was, because he tested positive for something, then it has to be John Jones. Unless we're going to do that. But I will, okay. We can disagree on those things. We can't disagree on this.
Okay.
You will not disagree with me. And this is, you should be ashamed of yourself. You mentioned 20 different knockouts this year.
Yeah.
You at least went down a laundry
list. There's one. There's one that I missed.
Raymond Daniels.
Yes, there's one that I missed.
Did a 720 out of Tony Hawk's Pro Skater.
There is one that
I
missed.
And you didn't mention him.
Listen, one of the constants when it comes to my award show is that I will always miss some sort of obvious one. And dare I say, I used to miss like 4 or 5. I'm just one man. I would actually go as far as to saying that's the only one that I missed. The only one that I missed of all the categories. And I didn't even have time to go through all the categories because the honorable mentions because of the fact that we were running out of time and stuff. But I did go through all the knockout ones, and you're right. I did miss that one, and it killed me inside. So I'm actually really happy you brought that up. And by the way, can I just say this? I gave you the freaking document that had everything on it. Not once did you mention, what about Raymond Daniels?
I can neither confirm nor deny this accusation.
Not once. Happened there?
Listen, don't blame me. You know, when you're giving shout-outs to everybody you talk to, you said Kaposa. You didn't say me. So well, take good. It up with Kaposa.
Good
take
thing
it up
I
with
didn't
Kaposa.
Say you because you stabbed me in the back. like a real Jezebel.
No, honestly, though, I mean, kudos to Raymond Daniels for that knockout. Definitely deserved some recognition. But when Masvidal does what he did this year, like, it's tough. Everybody, I think, earmarked that one as the knockout of the year, and then Masvidal did what he did.
Yeah, actually, it really bothered me that I didn't have a chance to give the honorable mentions for most improved comeback and walkout because those were in the Izzy and Masvidal interviews that I kind of just gave them out. Remember that?
Yeah.
So what the hell? I'm just going to say now. Most improved, the other ones were Jared Cannonier, Walt Harris, Ryan Bader, Jack Hermanson, Molly McCann, Irene Aldana,
yeah.
Comeback fighter. These are honorable mentions. The winners were Masvidal for both. Masvidal won comeback as well. Nate Diaz, Korean Zombie, Francis Ngannou, Joanna Jędrzejczyk, Stipe Miocic, Josh Emmett. Remember his face
was
completely shattered.
Yeah.
Darren Till coming back after the knockout. Nicholas Dalby. And one that has really not gotten a lot of attention and should, Daniel Strauss. Coming back from the motorcycle accident and being successful. So kudos to him.
Did you consider Ronda Rousey for that one?
Absolutely not. As far as walkouts, Colby Covington with the Kurt Angle walkout in Newark was great. Oka Sasaki, Ryzen 17. Jay Kuhn has completely dominated the walkout scene in Ryzen. He's born for that. David Rickles walking out to the Genki Sudo tribute. Ben Askren's first walkout, UFC 236, was great. Uriah Faber's walkout in Sacramento was tremendous. The Rampage Pride tribute just a couple of weeks ago and the Aleem Aleem McFarlane walkout in Hawaii was great as well. So I just wanted to give those honorable mentions too.
All deserving.
Yes. And another one that I forgot to say, Coach of the Year honorable mention, James Krause, I think deserved credit for the stuff that he's doing out of Kansas City as well. So I think I kind of covered everything there. Yeah, this has been comprehensive. What a fun way to kick off the year. But as you know, each and every episode, we like to end it one way and one way only. So let's hit it.
TST's Minimalist Tip of the Week.
All right, Ariel. So in the spirit of the new year, when people are changing habits, adopting new habits, I would like to throw some minimalism in here with some, and you are a victim of this too, Ariel. You do this. You are so addicted to your technology. I want everyone listening, the next time you are in line at something, whether it is at the grocery store, at the phone store, whatever it is, look at everyone, and everyone is just like on their phones, not acknowledging other people's existence. This is one of my biggest pet peeves. Another one of my biggest pet peeves is when you are out to dinner with someone or you're out with coffee with someone, a friend that you're catching up with, haven't seen in a while, and they just whip out their phones like middle of the conversation and are on it for like a minute, not looking at you, not absorbing what you were saying to them. Like, be courteous. I'm giving you my time. And you can tell that recently happened to me why I'm fired up about this.
Oh.
I'm giving you my time. So give me the respect I deserve because I don't want to disrespect you like that. So I want people in 2020 to be more mindful of using your technology. You don't always have to be listening to music. You don't always have to be listening to a podcast. Spend some time alone with your thoughts and to give people the respect that they deserve when you are with them. And I know this isn't minimalism in the sense of getting rid of things, but it is a bad habit that people fall victim to, and I think people should eliminate in 2020.
This might be my favorite tip of them all. I know we've only been doing this for a couple months, but I was actually thinking about it this morning, so I appreciate you bringing this up. I need to stop. Too much on the phone, too much on social media, too much reading comments. New York Rick and I have been talking about the comments for years, but even little things, before going to bed, I don't need to look at Twitter.
Right.
It's over.
It's truly a fantastic tip. I agree with both of you, except for one caveat. So if you're on social media and you're looking at ESPN MMA on Instagram or Twitter,
yeah.
I would say, you know, just keep going on that.
Yeah.
You know, ignore everybody else around you. But other than that, definitely put your phone down.
I get what you're saying. This is a bit of a weird one for you because that's essentially your job. But I do think that at times, like, you're literally standing there for 2 seconds ordering a coffee. Why do you have to pull out your phone?
Agreed.
Just look around you. You're right.
Agreed.
It's an addiction.
I love going to coffee shops where they turn off the Wi-Fi. Like, it's not a thing there. Or they do have Wi-Fi, but the password is like, hey, don't use this Wi-Fi, you idiot. Things
really?
Like that. Yeah.
I love that.
I've been in places like that. I just think it's something that we all fall victim to. And, you know, I'm very mindful. Like, I'll turn the music on in my car when I'm on a long drive just instinctively just to, you know, just to have something, and then I turn it off because I'm like, wait, no, I have things to think about. Something is happening that I should talk out loud to myself about right now and work through. Don't just run away from your problems.
It's a great point. It really is a great tip. I'm not a big New Year's resolution guy, but I will admit there was a part of me at the beginning of the year who challenged myself to use the phone a little less. Do you guys get the notification on your phone every Sunday where it tells you how many hours or minutes you spent on your phone that week? I don't know how this happens.
The screen time thing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's always very depressing. I turn that off.
Oh, why'd you turn it off?
Listen, I mean, I'm on my phone more than any human who's ever existed. I'm okay with not knowing that.
Oh, it is very depressing. It's a little victory when they say, like, you were down 5% from last week. I'm like, yes, but it's still like 13 hours out of the day. Like, what? I'm spending more than 50% of the day on my phone? That can't be right.
We got to celebrate Screenless Saturday when we're in Vegas for the Connor fight?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm just not going to do my job. I'll just be fired.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. TST, when he was in Vegas in December, he was like, yeah, you're going to do Screenless Saturday breakfast with me? I'm like, what are you talking about? Like,
it's a weekly tradition I do with my friends. We don't bring our phones in.
I feel like we're all in the wrong profession. If we want to do that, employ this.
I can't.
Maybe you could get away with it, TST.
You think I'm not important enough?
No, it's just your job doesn't, you know, depend on being in front of a screen. I could probably get away with it. For a couple hours, and I'd probably miss a whole lot of things. There's no way New York Rick could get away with it.
You were on vacation in Miami not too long ago.
Yeah.
What was your screen time usage like there?
Yeah, you know, I tried. There were some big moments, by the way. There were big moments. There were moments where I actually took my phone and put it in my backpack. Like, usually it's always in my pocket, right? I actually put the phone in my backpack, and there were times where I went into my pocket to get it, and I was like, oh, yeah, it's not there. I need to stop. I need to just take a break. Now, did I pull off the idea of not using it every night or in the morning? No, of course not. That will never happen, or at least not in the near future. But there were small victories of putting it in my backpack and then reaching for it and it not being there and moving on. And it's almost like a weird itch. It's like, ah, am I going to fight this? Am I going to win? Am I going to actually be able to overcome? And in the end, you kind of overcome, but then you get a headache. It's bizarre. What's wrong with us?
I can confirm this, by the way, because I often talk to Ariel while he's, you know, trying to be phoneless and we're talking on our phones. This time, minimal, very minimal.
That's what I like to hear.
There's like a fear of a big news story. Like last year I was away and then John Jones, you know, that whole thing happens and they move the event and it's like, when's the atomic bomb going to drop on the news cycle? But this year it didn't happen.
I've got a review here, Ariel.
Oh, thank you.
Okay. So DaBus 187. Says, simply the best with a 5-star review. I have been listening to this show for 8 years now and have yet to find a show that comes even remotely close to it. Simply put, Ariel is the best in the business and there's no need to go anywhere else.
Wow.
Love the Monday and Wednesday shows, and I especially love TST.
Yeah,
and,
right.
And even Corporate Jake.
What?
I miss what? New York Rick. I miss New York Rick, and most of all, I love the Canadian kid, Ariel Helwani, hashtag knows world order for life.
This a real review slash comment?
This is real.
Wow.
I was worried for a second.
Verbatim?
There, I have to admit.
Verbatim.
Well done. What's that guy's name?
DaBus.
DaBus.
Shout out DaBus.
And what's this music?
It's a little like Irish thing. You know, oh, okay. We're getting geared up for Connor. He's fighting. So,
all right. Go. And TST will be there as well.
I will be there. I'll be back in Vegas. How about that?
Unbelievable. the popular demand.
The minimalist anti-paradise.
Yes, you are back. All right. So that's it. We're done looking ahead to 2020. Now we're just going to live in 2020. Now we're just going to actually do this thing. And it's been nice having a few weeks off, right? You know, not a lot of big fights. I think that's really helped the build up to the Connor fight. There's nothing else to think about, right? There's just these commercials that everyone is overanalyzing. How dare they not show Donald Cerrone in a 30-second spot during the NFL playoffs? Guess what? The second one had Cerrone in it. People get all upset about these things. They get all up in arms. You're Kirk. Great job, my friend.
Thank you, sir. An honor.
You're not actually sitting next to me on Breaking the Fourth Wall, but I'm mimicking giving you the knife that you put in my back.
You know what? I'm just going to wipe it off and save it for next year.
Yeah. Thanks so much. And Captain Eric and Henry say thank you as well. TST, great job to you as always. We appreciate your time and your production skills and your tips as well. This one really struck a chord, so I'm going to try my best. I appreciate all of you for listening, downloading, subscribing, rating, reviewing, sharing, telling everyone about what we're doing here. We appreciate it more than you know. It's good to be back. It's good to be back doing the shows. If you missed the award show on Monday, it still lives up a few days later. So go check it out. Thanks for watching. And also, thanks for watching Iron on the Bad Guy, which is probably out by the time this comes out, or maybe a couple hours later. But for the most part, it comes out Wednesday night. Watch that as well. Tell your friends about that as well. We'll talk to you Monday. Thanks so much.